Hello and welcome to the Monday, May 19th, 2014 edition of the Sands and its Storms and its Stormcast. My name is Johannes Ulrich and I'm the recording from San Diego, California. Apparently, Apple's recent updates to iTunes on OS X didn't work out quite as planned. The update fixed a problem that left users' home directories writable by setting the user's folder to be world writable on some machines. Apparently, it really depended on how you had your system set up and how many users you had, but the slash users folder essentially ended up world writable, which of course exposed all users' data. However, it looks like Apple still didn't get it right after they fixed the permissions, and now some people noted that the user's folder totally disappeared. It was now hidden. And with this new patch that Apple released on Friday, this problem should be fixed, so your user's folder will now be not world writable but still visible. And this only affects OS X users. This does not affect, of course, Windows users of iTunes. On Friday, Russ wrote a great diary about the use of PowerShell to remotely remove SMB share access and enforce security policies. Turns out that Windows Server 2012 R2 and Windows 8.1 have a special revoke SMB share access commandlet that does just what Russ needed it to do here, and he shows us a couple of examples in how to deploy this particular function. Personally, I'm not a big Windows user, but coming from the Unix world, this looks exactly like what I was always missing when I was using Windows in the past, so I really recommend that you take a look at PowerShell if you do have to administer a number of Windows systems. And Kaspersky is warning mobile phone users of fake antivirus products that are using the Kaspersky name. Recently, Kaspersky found a product that called itself Kaspersky Mobile or Kaspersky Antivirus 2014 in both the Google Play Store and the Windows Phone Store. Currently, Kaspersky only offers a product for Android, not for Windows, and that product is called Kaspersky Internet Security for Android. We haven't really seen a lot of fake antivirus for desktops recently, or at least it has been a little bit quiet about this. So I think it looks like the attackers are now trying that same trick on mobile phones. We have seen this before. There was just recently a fake antivirus application that actually made it into one of the top downloaded applications in the Google Play Store. And a blog post by Australian researcher Shubham Shah about bypassing two-factor authentication got quite a bit of coverage. And in this blog post, he focuses on the use of two-factor authentication among Australian telcos, but he also covers some popular social networking sites, like for example Facebook and LinkedIn. The real problem that he's pointing out here is that in some cases the credentials for the two-factor, so the number or whatever you have to enter, is left as a voicemail if the user doesn't pick up the phone, and then with spoofed caller ID you can retrieve that voicemail. There's still a lot of telcos in the US and in other countries as well that just allow you access to your voicemail if you call from your own phone. Now, the way they identify your phone is the spoofable caller ID information, and that turns now into a problem if the voicemail that was left is this two-factor credential. I guess one workaround here is, and I have seen Google Voice do that, where if they call you and you pick up the phone, you first have to press a number to make sure that you're not a voicemail system. So this way they don't leave those numbers on a voicemail system. That sounds like a pretty simple fix for that. Ultimately, I would hope that all telcos allow you to set a PIN code at least if you are calling from your own phone, so you are always required to enter a PIN code and the caller ID is no longer trusted. And what would the podcast be if you don't talk a little bit about devices? This time it is the D-Link DSP W215 Smart Plug. Actually, it was just released, as well as the D-Link DIR505L router, which uses a very similar firmware. The Smart Plug, essentially an outlet that you can plug in, and then you can control it remotely via a smartphone app. There is no web app on the device itself. There's just an HTTP API that, of course, uses our old favorite HNAP to configure the device. And then the smartphone application, if you can get it to work, will just use that API to do things like turn the plug on and off. Now, typically that requires authentication. However, one of the DCGI that's being exposed here by this API does have a very basic buffer overflow. It's almost one of those textbook buffer overflows where they're setting aside 500,000 bytes of memory of a buffer, but then they blindly copy data in from the HTTP request up to the size whatever the content length claims the length is for this particular request, so they're not capping it at 500,000 bytes. This particular plug was just released. It's not even sort of widely available yet. D-Link already posted an updated firmware for it, and according to D-Link, when you use the device, when you connect to it via with your smartphone app, the smartphone app should prompt you and ask you to update the firmware if your device is vulnerable. Well, that's it for today, so thanks again for listening, and talk to you again tomorrow. Bye.